Outdoors coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors,
beat on a book on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun. Our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Good morning, everybody. This is Inside Outdoors, and I'm Don Jordan right here on radio in Bloomington, Indiana with my friends, Rich Reardon. Say hi, Rich.
Hey, how you doing?
And Alan Bronnenberg.
Hey, good morning, folks.
And here we are. Weather kind of broke this week, and I don't know. Everybody's back to fishing again, it sounds like. What's going on with you two?
Well, we kind of brought it up, but we ought to just keep that conversation going. But all of us saw the post about the amazing amount of discussion about catfish in the lake, so maybe we could start there. Alan, why don't you tell them what they said to start?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been reaching out to more Facebook sites that have to do with outdoors, just to see what, you know, the conversation is, you know, with fishing, hunting, wherever, you know, around our area. There's some really strong feelings out there that I really just wasn't aware we're in the in the general discussion of outdoors, but lots of people advocating in the strongest possible way for blue catfish to be stocked in Lake Monroe as opposed to channel cats or flatheads, saying that some people said they taste better. Some people said that when they get over 10 pounds, you know, the blue tastes worse than the others. I was just, you know, kind of really surprised that this discussion would, you know, took a such passion. And there were so many people, you know, advocating for blue catfish and some quite knowledgeable people. You know, not just, you know, your average guy who, you know, whatever reason he has, but there were some knowledgeable people commenting that they felt that should happen as well.
Well, I have to agree that, you know, eating certain kinds of catfish don't taste quite as good. I think that the blue cat probably is better, but I don't eat anything that's big. They were talking about, you know, wanting to catch a 40-pound catfish and eat it, and how mushy the meat was, and it's like I wouldn't eat anything that big to begin with. So,
well, nobody's going to eat that fish.
No.
I mean, you know.
The main thing is that it's loaded with mercury and
that's the main reason.
Lead and PCBs and probably Aldrin and Dieldrin and
been doing it for years too.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bigger the fish gets, the more it gets. They bioaccumulate it. You know, you're talking anything over 10 pounds out of any lake in Indiana is loaded.
Oh, you know?
Why would you want to eat that?
I can't imagine.
Feed it to your family, you know, neighbors.
I never saw anybody mention that.
I can't imagine anybody, anybody knowledgeable anyway, would eat anything much over 2 pounds. I mean,
right.
Well, I certainly wouldn't. I don't channel catfish are just fine in that 2 pound range, 2-3 pound range. That's what we'd call an eater, I'd say.
Right.
Just about every other fish out there. But, you know, you get, even 5 pound fish, you know, if you had one of those a week for a year, you might grow a new head.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good for you at all. That's way over the limits of any of the standards for all of the chemicals that we know we're not supposed to be consuming. So I guess the other question here is if in fact that's true. I mean, are there catfish tournaments? I mean, I know.
Yes, there are catfish tournaments.
Okay.
I never encouraged them when I was the local outdoor writer.
Right.
At first I was enthusiastic about fishing tournaments, and then I became less enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And I'm still less enthusiastic.
Yeah.
But yes, there is an actual catfish tournament trail out there. And I formerly was in contact with a member of that group who was catching 40-pound flatheads regularly at Lake Monroe.
Right.
Regularly. You know,
sure.
Not just like, you know, once a month or once or twice a year, but. He would send me pictures of them all the time. So they're in there. The big flatheads are in there. I've heard that divers who dove at the tower down by the dam saw catfish down there as big as they were.
Yeah.
And that would have to be flatheads. I mean, there may be a few stray blues, which are said to go to 100 pounds.
Holy Hannah.
That's a big catfish, you know.
That's a big catfish.
And you're surely not going to eat that. And
no.
And here's the other thing. The DNR, I don't believe, is ever going to be stocking Lake Monroe with anything regularly again.
I can't imagine they would either, yeah.
They stopped, you know, it was actually seemed to be working, that all this predator loading.
Right.
Right.
They were doing. It seemed like the bluegills were getting a little bigger, and the crappie are definitely a little bigger now.
Yeah.
More people catching a stray 15-incher. But they're still small, but there's some 13-inchers in there. That used to be 11-inch wafer-thin crappies down there.
Yeah.
So that was working, and the year class thing worked out. There's been a couple of big year classes get off down at Monroe. So people are catching those now. You're catching those 13-inch crappies. Some people catching 14, 15-inch crappies.
Yeah.
So that's a high watermark for Lake Monroe fishing, Lake Monroe crappie fishing.
Sure.
The bluegills are still not going to, I don't think they'll probably ever do good again at Monroe because of the shad.
Yeah.
Too much competition in that shallow water. So, we're going to get stuck with those, the spare walleyes that they have been giving us in the past few years since they quit regularly stocking. And I don't believe they're stocking wipers anymore.
No.
Although there seems to be some smaller ones in there, and maybe they're dumping a few spares that they, you know, they can't give to anybody in Northern Indiana, that they'll bring them down here and give to us.
Yeah. You may be right about that. Yeah.
So Northern Indiana definitely gets the attention because they have all those natural lakes up there. We have very, very little in that regard down here. I don't know.
Well, what's interesting about those natural lakes is most of them are so polluted right now that, you know, I'm not certain how those lakes will ever come back in terms of being, you know, the right kind of habitat for any kind of quantity of fish. They have too many boats on them. They too have too many houses, all with septic tanks around them, right near the water level. So, we were on Wawasee for many years, Chapman Lake for a few years. And I can tell you both of those lakes, first of all, they've been channeled out so that there's more lakefront property. So that lowered the water level and condensed it, you know, quite a bit. And then they just added more houses, so there's more septics, and those lakes are highly polluted at this point.
Well, I'm sure that's true, unfortunately. And, you know, that does create algae blooms, as we know.
Yep.
On the other hand, those kind of waters is where are where you find often the largest largemouth bass.
Oh, sure.
And you may not find very many of them, and you may not find many young ones, but you'll find some monsters in that, yeah. those kind of waters. And Monroe is kind of on that kind of borderline almost.
That's from stocking years ago, right, Don? I mean, that's what that's from largely?
Well, not the bass. The bass are naturally reproducing, of course.
Okay.
The largemouth. The smallmouth that showed up in there at first were from the old Salt Creek, you know.
Yeah, okay.
I haven't heard of anybody catching one of those in decades now.
Right.
But the largemouth, yes. And there are big largemouth in there. You know, there's 7-pound fish caught not infrequently.
Sure.
And that's big for Indiana.
What about the crappies? You know, how did the crappies get so...
Well, that is a result of the shad. You know, the shad come in, push out the bluegills.
Right.
The crappies have room to expand, and they like to eat the baby shad.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's a matter of food.
Yeah.
The shad pretty much filter out all that little stuff that those little bluegills need to survive.
Right.
So they eat their food, and they eat them.
Yeah. I assume that in lake perch as well.
There's some lake perch in there, I guess. You know, I've caught one or two in the last 50 years.
Yeah. Wow.
There are still yellow bass in there, which people catch every now and then, mostly out there trolling for walleye.
So help me with this, though. So, you know, my feelings and, you know, just what I know about biology in general. If you're going to introduce some predatory fish to remove smaller crappie, that's only going to make the fish that are already there, your chances of catching a larger fish are better because they're just not as many small ones to get in your way.
Oh, well, so,
I mean, that's what it sounds like. Somebody's want. Sounds like to me, someone wants to, because when I go crappie fishing, I catch all these little ones before I catch a big one. So I want somebody to remove all the small ones so that when I'm crappie fishing, I only catch big ones. Well, I mean, that seems to be the sentiment, right? I mean,
that's pretty illogical. You may be right, but that is the most illogical type of fisheries management I've ever
absolutely
heard of.
It is. That's my point. And you know, I keep seeing this people wanting to do this, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Are you crazy? I mean, you know, do you want us to catch it for you and pull it up and put it in the boat for you? Do we need to set it in your live well for you? I mean, come on. That's not fishing, you know. That's that's being served.
Well, anybody who has ever fished at Lake Monroe, especially if you're a bank fisherman and a dock fisherman, there's all these people that fish the docks. You know?
Right.
And you're going to catch 20 or 30 crappies out there with your bucket of minnows.
Of course.
And they're all going to be 11 inches long, and you see through them when you hold them up to the light.
Exactly.
And every once in a while, you might catch a nice one. Once in a while.
Right? Yeah.
Other than that, you got to go out on the lake and start looking for them.
Yeah,
you know, that you're not going to just find them. They're not hanging around the docks.
No,
you got to go out there and fish those channels where those brush piles are, 12, 15 feet, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess the question would be, because they're so thin and, you know, they're eating up all the food around under the docks there, would that be a good place to actually feed those fish to get them bigger? I mean, is that a strategy?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people think they get fed with sewage regularly.
Yeah, I would have thought so, yeah.
I'd say the waters are probably fairly rich around those marinas.
Okay.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I know one time in the Fairfax Bay was critical.
Oh, yeah.
They even moved the boats out of there.
Yeah.
Remember when the boats used to be clear, they had docks clear over in the bay over there by the
House
Point? Yeah, that was proving bad for the blue-green algae bloom. I mean, good for the blue-green algae, but bad for us.
and for anybody wanting to swim.
Right, exactly.
Right there. The buoys went right up to the swimming area. I mean, the buoys were right there.
Yes, they were.
And, yeah.
Anybody that, you know, the law is if you have a toilet on your boat,
right,
you have to have that tied off and sealed, the discharge
right.
of it, with a DNR seal on it or something.
Right.
You know? Well, I wonder how many of those discharges ever get checked.
Well, you know the answer to that. Have you actually ever seen anybody checking one? I haven't.
I haven't, but I don't see everything.
You know. No, I don't either. But I mean, you know, as much as you're out there, as much as I'm living right here, you'd think you'd be, if it was happening, somebody'd see it. And I just don't see it happening. But no. I'll tell you what I do see. Sunday night, a line of boats rushing over to the cove here next to me, and staying for about 10, 15 minutes and turning around and going back, to the dock.
What was that all about?
That's where they're going to dump their toilets.
Oh, is that right?
Cove. Yeah.
Yeah. Over there by your house.
Yeah. Okay. And it's called Catfish Cove on the map, which is right at the end of my property down here. And it's interesting that it's called that because I can stand on the bank there and see, you know, giant catfish swirling around on those shallow waters right there. And I never see anyone fishing for catfish there. Never. It's called Catfish Cove. You can visibly see them from the top of the water. And yet I never see anyone fishing there.
Well, you'd think those catfish boys would be all over that.
Oh, my God. They're huge. You know. Yeah. But I would think that if there, that's why I didn't think there was that much catfishing going on at Lake Monroe, because I never see anybody down there, and you know that cove is just full of them.
Well, so, as I understand it, it's primarily a nighttime pursuit,
right?
So you may not see too many of them.
Well, that could be.
And there's a lot of bank catfishing.
Yeah,
that's a lot of bank fishermen are fishing for catfish, and why not?
Right.
Well, we used to do it always up in the, you know, north part of the lake, on the other side of the causeway in the no wake zone. That's where I thought they pretty much all were, but I guess I'm wrong. But, you know, off of Friendship Road and up in those, you know, northern little creeks that feed it, you know, say Salt Creek. And I always did very well up there. Matter of fact, I lost a pole to one time. That must have been huge one.
Wow.
That was the old story. I bought a pole to fish in the surf in North Carolina, and it was a big pole, and brought it back, and I said, well, I'll use it for catfishing, and I had it set up, you know, next to my chair by the, and I was fishing with another rod for whatever I could get, and that one just flew out of the, up in the air, and boom, it was gone. I thought, wow. Well, that must have been a big one.
Damn.
Yeah, you hate to lose an outfit like that, though. You know? Yeah.
I know. I had no idea that I could. After that, I tied them all to my chair.
So help
so they
me.
They drag you in, too.
Well, that, you never know with some of those 80-pound ones, you know,
yeah.
If they're out there.
Oh, they're out there. So fill in a piece of my a hole in my knowledge here. So does anybody do, you know, noodling for catfish like they do?
No. Maybe. You know,
are they different kind of catfish, or is the water just not right here? What's the story? Is it just a local thing?
It's just not a tradition here. I know some people say they've done it and do it, but I've never seen anybody doing it in Indiana ever.
I've never heard of anybody locally doing it, but it's not a different kind of catfish, right? I mean, it's the same.
No. Yeah. They're generally channel catfish that you get out of those holes.
Yep.
They like to breed in holes. All catfish do, actually. So you could get a flathead, you could get a channel catfish, you could get a big old blue.
Yeah.
And, you know, that'd be interesting.
that would. So yeah. I had no idea. I mean, I just thought it was a whole different kind of fish just because no one does it here. I just assumed that there must be something different about the catfish that are here that no one does it, but it is, it's just a cultural thing then, huh?
Yeah, I think it's got something to do with the mental capabilities of the people involved.
I'm sure, I mean, that's true.
Are you crazy enough to stick your hand in a hole underneath the bank and could be a snapping turtle in there, it'll take your finger plumb off.
Exactly. Or you know, a copperhead, a cottonmouth, you know, who knows?
Especially down there, it usually happens in the South, and I always thought about that. Like, I wouldn't even want to begin to do that. I think it's something to impress the girl that's up there on the beach watching you do it.
Well, they had that noodling show on TV for a while on the Outdoor Channel. Did you ever watch that?
I watched it a couple times. I mainly see it on YouTube.
These two guys would take out tourists or people who'd signed up to do this.
Right.
And they wade into water about chest deep and start feeling around on the whole bottom for these holes where these catfish are. Every one of them was down in that muddy water, you know.
Man.
Getting thrashed around by those big catfish. It was fairly humorous.
No thanks. Well, you know, there's a YouTube channel that's got a fairly attractive young girl on it, who wears a bikini and does the noodling. And of course, she's got millions of hits for, you know, for each of her videos.
Yeah, I think
there's a little snow snake medicine involved with some of those guys before they start doing it.
That's conceivable.
I would think there would have to be something involved in the way of chemical courage, because I can't imagine, you know, what it would take for you to sit down and go, hey, I got an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go stick our hand in this hole in the bottom of the lake and see what's in there.
Yeah. Hey, maybe if we stick our arms down there, the catfish will chomp down on it and we can catch catfish that way. Who was the first guy who decided to do that? I'd love to know.
Desperate guy.
Yeah.
He was hungry.
He was hungry. He was hungry.
That would probably be the only way I'd imagine wanting to do that.
But, you know, speaking of things like that, and people like that, lots of reports on the DNR blotter about, you know, lost canoes, people clinging onto something for 23 hours before they're found. And
I guess you saw that one about the kayakers that they found with their drone.
With their drone.
The conservation officers deployed a drone with an infrared sensor and found them within 5 minutes of getting out of their truck.
Exactly. And yeah, these guys, you know, couldn't manage to, you know, get to shore and get in. It's like, wow, really?
There was four people, one of them a 8-month pregnant woman.
Yeah.
Was involved.
Yeah. And in a kayak.
Yeah. And they got swept. They somehow got dumped out of their boats and lost their boats.
Yeah.
I don't understand how
they all did. Yeah.
And they were going to camp the night. They decided they were going to camp the night on the riverbank.
Right. They did, but.
Well, they're lucky it wasn't. It's not mosquito weather yet, eh?
Oh boy. And you know, I guess the follow up from last week, which is a great show, by the way, guys. I really enjoyed.
It was good.
It was a lot of fun, and I learned a lot. I would think that this week we'll be in the 80s and down to around 70 at night. I assume that we'll be getting a visit from our big buzz friends here, but I have not seen any yet other than the few little holes I saw, but no insects.
Ah, yes.
Cicadas.
Did you see the picture of my wife with her cicadas?
I
figured that wasn't from this year.
That was from this year.
It was.
What?
Yeah, it was yesterday.
Oh my
gosh. Get out of here.
No, I'm not. We've got them all over the place. And there was another crop of them out there this morning on the irises.
Oh man.
On my irises.
That's
and the ferns and you name it. They're out there.
Well, we don't have any here yet. You know, you guys up north there.
Well, I don't know too many people that would do what she did. So what was the?
You gotta hear this. This is a result of some child.
Just because nobody, I don't know how many people have seen it, but it looks like she has curlers in her hair.
Right.
My glasses on, and that's what I thought it was.
I went out and actually helped her harvest exoskeletons from all over. You know, she's got a mason jar full of exoskeletons. And so she takes those and puts them all over her hair and her blouse and hanging in the iron vest. And this was all stimulated by some kind of strange competition, perhaps, that she had with her sisters back on the farm up in Adams County.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
Jay County, up in Amish land.
Right? Yeah.
So this was apparently a form of beautification among the locals.
Wow. Yeah, I think African tribes do that as well.
Well, her sister sent her a picture of her with a bunch of exoskeletons hanging on her blouse. So had to outdo her and go the Medusa cicada.
That was Medusa, yeah, there you go.
Medusa cicada.
That's perfect. That is perfect.
Yeah, well, anyway, that was pretty funny.
It was.
Yeah, I'm shocked, though, that the difference between, you know, where you are and where we are, there's not a one here yet. I haven't heard a peep, so.
Well, hey, I got a peep here. We ought to read, the turkey harvest. Have you guys gone over that this year?
I haven't seen it, no.
Along those lines, where I was seeing all those turkeys along the dam road, and then I didn't see any. Yesterday, I saw one that looked like it was maybe year and a half old. It was a small one in the same place, but I didn't see the flock of big ones like I had been seeing before the season started. So,
well, I've had the same experience. I haven't seen hardly any turkeys. So the harvest figure here, I don't know what the heck they're talking about, but, this year, the fall, Indiana fall turkey harvest. This is the fall turkey harvest. They're saying that Indiana bagged 610. And that's an increase of 13.38% over last year.
Wow.
So 610 doesn't seem like very many.
It does not.
I'm looking at the county by county here. And Brown County, we got 91. Monroe County, we got 53. And guess what county's got the most? What do you guess?
Green?
Switzerland. Good old Switzerland County, the one that always has the highest deer total.
Get out of here.
They've got the highest turkey total.
And that's a small county by...
It's a tiny little county. It's not as small as Ohio County, but it's right next to it. And anyway, 114 is what they bagged there. And that's fairly high. Brown County.
What about Greene County? I mean, Greene County is the largest geographic county in the state. I would have guessed it.
Well, it has a fairly high total of 82.
Compared
to 91 for Brown. Lawrence County had 50, which is, I thought they would be higher because they've got Hoosier National Forest down there. Another high county in our part of the state was Floyd County down on the river, 51. And good old Steuben County up in the very northeastern tip of Indiana, 110. So there wasn't a lot of turkeys harvested. The best harvest year they've ever reported, as far as back as they go, was 2015 and 2016, when the fall turkey harvest produced 921 birds.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's the deal.
So I assume that there's lots of states that have zeros after their... turkey count. Is this like the 80-20 rule where 20% of the counties have 80% of the the kills? Is that the way this is?
Well, it's pretty much scattered in two belts, one along the southern part of the strip of the state, and one across the northern part of the state, all the way across until you get to Porter County.
Yeah.
Those are the areas where that are the most productive.
Sure.
The southern part of the state being much more productive overall than that northern strip.
I assume because it's more wooded.
Okay, I got some spring turkey harvest scent. This is the one we just finished. Ready for this?
Yeah.
Now, for some reason, they were giving us the total number ever killed. And it says in previous seasons. So this year we got 12,320 total turkeys killed. Now that's the cumulative of all the seasons we've ever had. Now that is the weirdest record keeping I've ever seen. Yeah. But anyway, check-in count for the 2021 season in Monroe County was 167.
Oh my.
Yeah, 167. And Switzerland County had 339 birds.
Jeez.
So, you know, the spring turkey harvest was more productive by far.
Guess so.
Steuben County had 250 birds. And again, it's that southern band of counties. And let's see, Greene County had 284 birds. Brown County, 1,049 birds. Oh, no, that's not right. That's not right. Let me get this correct. Ah, there we go. 161 birds.
Okay.
There's been 1,049 killed in Brown County since 2015, I guess. So anyway, the numbers were down this year, spring hunt, compared to last year by almost 200. 2000.
Hmm.
So, hard to say what happened there. I'm sure they have it all analyzed out, but we haven't heard anything from them.
Is there any indication in those data, Don, about how many licensed hunters there were for turkey? Did they have fewer licensed hunters, or is this just, they're just not finding as many turkeys? Is that the deal? Anybody know yet?
Well, for one thing, whether you noticed or not, but when we had the wild deer biologist on, you know,
yeah,
he was avoiding, and specifically did avoid, giving us any hunter success data. They don't talk about that anymore because the number of hunting licenses has been dropping and dropping and dropping and dropping.
Yeah.
And I guess they're kind of that we don't, that bad news is bad news for them.
Right.
You know, so they're not talking about that. We'll probably never see a hunter success ratio again coming out of a state biologist, at least in Indiana. And since they have that policy now where any conversation with a member of the media has to be cleared through the Indianapolis offices.
Right.
And approved.
Right.
Before they can do it. I'd say we're not going to get a lot of news of that channel anymore since these guys could all get fired if they get caught doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Back when I used to know some of them, I could call them up and, you know, I could protect them because nobody would know where the information came from. Now they won't even talk to you. They're so afraid.
Yeah. Well, my guess is they're not even telling their own people what that data is, just because they know it'll get out if it's calculated and it's put on paper somewhere, somebody will find out about it. So they're probably not telling too many people.
Well, they have to tell the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service doesn't want to tell on their state buddies.
Right.
So it's hard to get any information out of them unless you write them a letter under the Freedom of Information Act and ask specifically what documents you're looking for. You can't just say, give me all your information.
Just
about
send me your data.
Right. Uh-huh. You
give me a big file.
You got to know what you're looking for, in other words.
Yeah.
You got to know what's there before you look. So
right.
It's pretty much hopeless, which is, of course, their intention.
Sure. So I guess, you know, let's just play that out. So their thoughts are that if the public actually knew how few people who paid for licenses were actually getting birds, then that would deter people from getting licenses. Is that the thought?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, no news is good news, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of the corporate approach too.
Yeah. Oh, I know it well.
I know some news that is good news, and that is that they caught the guy that's been taking the catalytic converters. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that.
So apparently they caught him with a Sawzall and a bunch of stuff in his back seat, and some others involved that they're looking into it. So,
do you think there was just one guy?
No, I'm saying he'll probably end up riding on his friends.
They said there's at least 4 to 6 other people that they're pretty much expecting to get charged.
The catalytic converter gang.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, there is uniform revulsion for those guys on every fishing site. All these guys that park their trucks, these guys have pissed off a lot of people. They're going to have no friends when they go through court, I can tell you that.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't know why the DNR doesn't put up some security cameras at these boat ramps.
Yeah, I don't either.
There aren't that many. They're not that expensive. Okay, so you don't want to pay a guy to empty trash cans, but you might save somebody a lot of money and trouble and whatever.
Well, and they might want to come back again.
Yeah, they might want to come back again. If you had security, you know, the security lights are minimal, just really minimal.
Yep.
And some security cameras would be good, but I'm not going to hold my breath until that happens.
I just want to know what kind of equipment this guy's using, because I can tell you when I get my saws all out or my grinder and I try to cut even a 2-inch piece of pipe, it takes me quite a while. I can't imagine how long it took him to cut through all those with nobody around, not getting caught. I mean, he was doing multiple vehicles.
I'd say it takes him about 15 or 20 seconds to make a cut on those exhaust.
Is the metal that thin?
It's pretty thin.
Okay.
It's not like a pipe.
You know? Oh, okay. All right.
And, well, I suppose knowing exactly where to cut helps a lot, too. Looks like he knew what he was doing. Knew right where the good stuff was and the soft spot.
Yeah.
Well, and he had to know, you know, like we may have touched on this before, but he had to know where to take them, because I can tell you, if you go to JB with more than one of those, you know, they're going to alert the police before you get out of the parking lot.
Well, that's true, but there's plenty of other places. I'm sure Indianapolis has any number of places, but be happy to see those converters.
This kid was from Brownstown or
Jackson County.
Scottsburg or somewhere down there. That's where he was from.
Yeah, there's lots of malfeasance down there.
Yeah.
That's a malfeasance.
Well, it's a good little valley to hide in down there, Scottsburg. So,
did they say how they caught him? I didn't see that. I just saw that he was caught, but I wonder if they were scoping it out or whether some other luck happened.
Yeah, I didn't read that. But that, somebody, I think, you know, for sure took a picture of his, the bed of his pickup truck, and evidently the idiot had just, you know, left the a couple of catalytic converters and some pipe and his Sawzall right open in the back of his truck. So,
yeah.
So I suspect somebody turned him in somewhere after taking that picture.
I hope they did.
Yeah.
I hope they did. I've had things stolen from, vehicles out of the Paintown parking lot in the past, and that you'd think that would be fairly protected, but no. I had a very expensive camera stolen out of a pickup truck once.
Ouch.
They broke in the window. I was taking some pictures of some guys down there for some reason, and they must have seen me, and I put the camera back in the truck and locked it up, but that didn't halt them.
Yeah.
And it was gone.
Oh, man.
I came back. Yeah, it was a Bronica 6x6.
Oh, jeez.
Which I brought back from Japan. Oh, well.
Yeah. They probably pawned it for $100, Don.
Well, probably. Yeah. If that.
Yeah.
Who knows? Well, in any case, hey, you know, it's May. It's May the 20th, May the 19th.
Yeah.
What is today, Saturday?
Saturday will be the 22nd.
22nd. Okay. Full moon this month, I believe, is the 28th or 26th or 28th.
Yeah.
And 1 week either side of the full moon is supposed to be the primo time for bluegills to nest.
So, oh, wow.
According to the standard theory, starting this next week, you know, probably this weekend sometime, you know, you should start looking for nesting bluegills until into the 1st of June, you know, well into the 1st of June.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to be there.
Well, and also, if you don't want to watch for them, you can watch for the super flower blood moon is what this one is going to be. And
the cicada.
It's also it's going to be a lunar eclipse. So
wow.
If you want to get up that night and take a
here?
Look, as far as I know,
oh, wow.
A whole bunch of Native American power stuff that are going on. Huh?
I would think so. Yeah. But anyway, that's May 26th. So watch for that. Gracing that night will be a lunar eclipse as
well. They call it the full blood moon.
There's something about the red glow that it has. You know, it's funny how they say these things and then it really kind of happens. I noticed that happened a few times this year where they called it a blood moon and it was red. So it must be something to do with the light reflecting off the moon, I believe. But
I just figured it was smog in the air between us and the moon.
Well, that could be too. It could get bloodier as we go, I guess.
Yeah, big clouds of ferrous oxide in the atmosphere.
Which reminds me, did you see the Prez driving the Ford F-150 electric on TV last night?
I did.
Well, everybody's so pleased about these electric vehicles. Well, only thing that's going to do is that we're going to have to build more giant electric power plants to charge these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not going to, it might relieve the amount of emissions coming out of the tailpipe, but it's certainly going to increase the amount of emissions coming from the electric power and generation industry. And no matter what they use, you know, if they use nuclear, well, we're just delaying it or waiting for it. If they use coal, well, you know, we know how bad that is. They use oil, same deal, carbon, you know, natural gas, well, they're still producing carbon. So the only answer is hydrogen. And nobody's even mentioning hydrogen. And they're so high on this electric car thing that they can't think of anything. They're so happy with themselves. Yeah. You know,
the hydrogen technology just isn't there yet. I think that's the problem. So
the technology's there. There's not any willingness to commit to it.
Well, the because of the price. I mean, the technology's there, but not at a price that anybody's going to pay. I will tell you, if it wasn't for that low end Tesla truck coming in at around $65,000. I sure wouldn't be looking at, you know, purchasing a $125,000 pickup truck.
They've already got them up to $80,000. You're going to pay maybe $100,000 for a new Chevy Duramax diesel.
Yep.
Truck.
For sure you are.
So they're already in the price range for electric vehicles. And so far as the cost of hydrogen, you're talking about the cost of generating the hydrogen gas itself. Well, that's a price we should be willing to pay for perfect emissions.
I would agree.
And I can't see that it in long term that it wouldn't be anything but beneficial and much cheaper long term.
So explain to me something. If you have a vehicle that's going down the road and turning a wheel, why can't you hook up a generator to the wheel so it it's powering the battery back up as we're driving. I've never been able to figure that out.
They have braking recovery.
Yeah, there's a percentage for that. It's like 70-some% recovery. So eventually that needs to be supplemented. It's not a perfect generation system. It's that's dependent on a number of things, obviously, but I think the best conversion they've had for its own generation was 73%. I can't remember. I remember reading about
that. I think that's pretty high.
Huh?
I'd say that's pretty high.
Yeah, that's perfect conditions.
The Formula One cars have that brake regeneration in them. And it keeps them going for the whole race is all I can say. I don't know what they're regenerating. They don't tell people those kind of numbers.
No.
But it's out there. And, yeah, you can regenerate some of it. And
how about putting some solar panels built into the top of the car, too?
Oh, that'd be okay. Will it run your Bell telephone?
It's just somebody calling me. I forgot to turn it off.
I love that Bell telephone ring. That's what I grew up with.
I can't handle anything else. it still jerks me to attention every time.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
Well, hey, before it gets too late in the show, I do want to mention a couple things, which is the lake level now is 1 foot up. And it is now at, down a foot. It's 540. So two feet above normal. And we also have temperature has gone up somewhat to 66.2 degrees. It was up higher than that. And then it came back down with the cool weather we had over the weekend, last weekend, and should be back up there. And another bit of news I think that's worth mentioning, because today is Saturday when this airs. On May 23rd, there is a hike at Yellowwood, that's 3 p.m. Sunday, and it'll be, you can join the Friends of Lake Monroe are doing this in the heart of Yellowwood State Forest. Explore a beautiful and important part of our watershed while having fun and getting some exercise. This will be a 2 to 3 hour moderate hike on maintained trails with significant grades. They will provide refreshments and some friends to hike with, and because it's kind of a group thing. And this is a member event, so you can also join Friends of Lake Monroe if you'd like. You can email questions and RSVP to membership@friendsoflakemonroe.org. Sounds like a cool thing to do if you're into checking out Yellowwood. That's a beautiful area to hike in. And there is some pretty cool forest left over there.
I hear somebody's got a Carolina wren singing outside of their window.
Hmm.
One of you two.
Not me.
It's probably me.
Yeah.
I can hear them right now pretty loud out the window.
Oh, they have the loudest voices for such a tiny little bird. They're just awesome.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
So let me
speak to which, a bunch of new birds came in on this south wind we've been having for the last few days.
Yeah.
I've got a veery, I never have one of those around. And he's singing away out here with that haunting, strange voice, song they have.
Cool.
And we have a number of warblers have been coming through finally.
Hmm.
And I saw a black and white, and I heard a Kentucky warbler. I don't know why he was up here north of the river, but he was. And the birds are generally. Oh, and I heard a black-billed cuckoo out here today, which is they're never here, hardly ever. So birds are moving right along. Garden's looking good. This rain was great. Been seeing night crawlers in the grass.
Yeah, we got zero rain here, guys.
Zero.
The 2 inches of rain that you had, we got nothing of it right here. Zero.
We didn't get two. We maybe got a half an inch.
Okay.
It hasn't rained at all. Little spitters of drizzle. That's about it.
Not much here either.
Really? So.
Now, Victoria was saying she was going to have to water garden this morning. So
I've been watering my seedlings, my radishes and lettuce and stuff. And looks like it's not going to rain after this front passes through. Nope. It's not going to rain for a week.
It's going to be dry.
So better get your hose ready for the water.
We got her ready.
Got it ready for that garden?
Yep.
Me too. I don't want to give it up already.
Now, do you just run it down to the lake, or do you have to pay for your water?
We got it right to the spigot here. And you know what's interesting is I don't drink Lake Monroe water. You know, I don't know if you do or not. You probably do.
We do.
Yeah, I've got North Lawrence water. My water comes out of a well down in the bottoms of Ulitic.
Of Ulitic. Oh, by the way, a shout out to my new dentist, Brant Finney, who is from Ulitic.
Oh, wow.
And he's got it off. He's a young fellow. He got a new office here in Bloomington. And
I'm glad to hear that.
Right. He was really great. And I was really glad to hear he's from Ulitic.
Yeah.
He didn't go very far from home to settle, did he?
Well, I'm glad to hear we're getting some new practitioners. You know, every community is suffering from the fact that, you know, the average age of a medical practitioner is in the high 50s. And it's, you know, we're not replacing them very fast. I think the new hospital and this regional approach to healthcare is going to have some new blood, badly needed new blood in the medical community come into the Monroe County area, and I think that's a good thing for us. But dentists especially are difficult to come by.
Well, I've had trouble with dentists my entire life.
Yeah,
so I'm really glad to have this guy. And even though it's going to cost me so much money that you wouldn't, you would just faint. If you knew how much dental work costs nowadays.
Listen, Don, I'm right there, man. I've, you know, some of the old work that I had done when I was a teen is all, of course, falling apart. So, I may have to visit your buddy here.
The bridge that I had put in 20 years ago that cost $500 installed. Yep. It will cost $11,000 to replace.
Exactly so.
how's that sound?
No, I know.
Isn't that outrageous? Gee.
It is. Oh. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I had one good guy here many years ago, and he was like 2 years away from retirement when I found him and could get into him. Then he retired, of course. You know, my guy now is down to working 2 days a week. It won't be long till I'll be looking for.
Right. I had the same thing. Robin Robbins retired. And then Gary Danielson, that was his name, Danielson, retired. Yep. And I've been without one for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
So here I am. Back on the chair again.
I haven't seen Robin for a while. I hope he's okay.
Not okay. He's in the memory unit.
What?
Yes.
Oh no! I did not know that.
Yeah, it's too bad.
Damn.
All of us who knew Robin Roberts and appreciated his sense of humor and goodwill.
He had a wonderful sense of humor.
Wish the best for him.
Yeah. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, me too. Well, what else you got to tell us?
Yeah, I'm gonna say
that was a lull after talking about our moment.
Yeah.
Our dental and medical industry makes everybody speechless around here.
Oh boy, yeah. Well, I hope that when they get all these new doctors and whatever they're going to have at this new hospital, they also get new hospital administration and board of directors. I would like to see that more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my understanding that one of the conditions of this hospital, and I could be all wet, the new hospital was that the old, what do they call themselves? The commission of ladies, you know, who drank tea, who ran the hospital. I can't
remember. Yeah, I don't know.
But I it was my understanding that that was to be dissolved and that there would be a new method for overseeing the hospital as the board of directors. So we'll see. I'm not certain that I have a perfect recollection of that, but I know that there were challenges to that old method of managing the hospital.
Well, they definitely need some improvement.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, it's going to be IU. IU is going to have the final hand in this for sure.
Well, I hope you're right. I guess I hope you're right. Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth. I mean, IU Health means a lot of different things and wherever you happen to land.
Wherever you happen to land. There's good systems and there's poor systems.
I mean, Bloomington Hospital didn't change its coat just because they changed its name.
But it did not.
So it may be IU Health now, but it's still Bloomington Hospital.
It is. And, you know, there has been some changes. I know the guy for sure who was running the show when they announced the new hospital. He stepped aside and there's somebody else new in there that kind of had been in the IU system elsewhere. So I think part of the problems we see in healthcare, these systems are looking for, you know, people with MD, MBAs, PhDs, law degrees, whatever, to run these hospitals. And they reach outside to other areas of the country to get those people. And they don't have the experience that we have locally here. So that's part of the problem.
Well, I think we're getting the high sign, Alan. And thanks a lot for joining us again. And Rich, it's good to see you. I hope everybody out there in the audience has a good time. And we'll see you next week with Inside Outdoors. What are your parting words, Richard?
Well, I tell you what, remember that you've got the blood moon coming up, the Superflower Blood Moon on the 23rd, I believe it was. And that is an eclipse as well. So other than that, it's going to be a really beautiful week next week. I mean, a little bit warm again, but I guess summer's coming. It's going to be in the 80s.
It's here.
Yeah, that's right. 87 was a prediction for like Thursday, I think.
Right. So I'm not too worried about that. It's just the humidity that gets me, but we'll see how it goes. But anyway, yeah, good to talk to you guys. We got about, 15 more seconds. So anything for you to say there, Alan?
Nope. Just all right. Summer's here. It's going to be hazy.
Hazy days of summer, yeah.
Hazy days of summer are here.
All right.
Have a great week, guys.
All right. Bye. Talk to y'all later.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.